some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We're live for the next hour at this special start time of 5 p.m. Pacific time. If you're listening live, thank you very much. Like Tony in Hackensack, New Jersey, who pinged me right before the show and said, I can't wait. And I said, well, either can I. Tonight, we've got Jennifer Thompson. She's with Monkey See Media out of San Diego, California. She's going to be our VIP guest superstar. We'll be bringing her on in just a couple of moments. But like we do every night, I want to give you a roadmap of where we've been this week, also where we're going, so you can set your clocks and VCRs accordingly and tune in every time you get the chance. But of course, you can always just follow the show and you get a link and it will take you to the show whenever we're live. Last night, we had comic John Cooperman on the show. Tomorrow night, Rebecca Fisk joins us. Our phone lines open at 6:45, 15 minutes before the show starts. So if you'd like to ask our psychic of the week a question, you can do so. I'm telling you this ahead of time because we always get legitimately hundreds of calls every time Rebecca is on, and I want to give you the option to try to beat everybody else into the system before they call in. So tomorrow, show starts at 7, phone lines open at 6:45. Call in and ask Rebecca a question about whatever you'd like. Thursday, we're doing a best of because I'm going to the Academia Music Awards up in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. So Rob said, please, let's do a best of so we can make sure the show goes smoothly. So you'll enjoy a repeat performance, hearing some great tales by Child of the 70s star Michael Vaccaro and also Craig Campobasso, who is a co-writer but is also producing a new movie that's going to be out this summer called Please Don't Eat the Pansies, and they're actually arranging all of the talent now. So you'll get a kind of a bird's eye view of what's going to be taking place later this summer on that particular movie. Friday, on the Friday Night Dance Party, we've got Ed Roman. He's a singer-songwriter out of Canada. He'll be joining us at 7 o'clock. And then we start the weekend off Saturday morning at 8 a.m. with Super Gay Radio with my co-host Paul Emery. We'll be welcoming, of course, Miss Viola for the RuPaul Review, and then author Chris Ando, who has been a guest co-host on this show before, but we're going to be talking to him about life in St. Louis and his best-selling novel called Delusions of Grandeur. Now, I would say without further ado, it's my pleasure to bring on our guest superstar today, Jennifer Thompson. She is the head of this fantastic company in San Diego called Monkey See Media. I had the distinct honor and pleasure of hearing her speak at the SCWA, Southern California Writers Association, back in January. And I think I took about 45 pages of notes when I never take notes on anybody who speaks. And I just couldn't stop writing. And she's agreed to spend a valuable hour of her time with us tonight and hopefully share some insights. So, Jennifer, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Garrett?
I'm thrilled that you're here. So I will tell you, out of all of the people that I get a chance to hear speak, you are absolutely, I would say, my number one, but there might be like a number two out there that I don't want to offend either. So you're like in my top two favorite guest speakers of all time. And
I appreciate that.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. This is going to be the first time for a lot of folks hearing your name and about your company. So I'd love for people to know a little bit about who you are and why you do what you do.
All right. Well, I'm passionate about books. That's the number one thing.
Yeah.
My company, Monkey See Media, as you know, we specialize in author services. That means websites, book cover design, interior design. But me personally, I'm really passionate about helping authors find their niche and figure out what their personal brand is. You have a pretty awesome personal brand, Garrett, but a lot of people don't realize they need a personal brand, even authors. So that's been kind of my 2016 mantra, is spreading the word about how to develop and establish your own brand and find your audience, get more visibility, and just be more successful in what you do.
I think that what you talk about is the personal branding is really important, especially for a lot of authors. You know, I'm lucky to have really talented people who are on the show on a regular basis, a lot of them from SCWA, but I have authors from all around the country. And it is surprising and shocking to me when I go start doing a little digging on the people who are on the show, and they really have no, they don't have a brand. They don't have a social media presence. They might, you know, talk a sentence or two about anything at some point, but they're not really out there actively selling themselves. And I'm stunned and shocked. And why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think this is sort of a new paradigm for authors. It used to be you were published. There was a traditional modeling, a traditional model of publishing, and people felt like they just needed to write books. But that's just not the case, and it's been changing pretty steadily for the last 15 years. And I think now people are ready to hear that, guess what, you have to market yourself, but first you have to know what you're marketing. And it's probably not your book. It's probably you. And so that's what I really help authors do, is figure out what they're selling and who they are and why they have the unique position to write this book and reach their audience. I think this is going to change. I think over the next 10 years, we'll see people really start to rise above their competition and do some pretty great things.
So when you decided to jump into this world, because you've had a different career in publishing along the way, and you've always been this, I call it a thought leader, or, you know, maybe somebody who says, you know, I can do it a little bit better. Can you maybe tell us what it was like when you first jumped, you know, I say dived into the pond or dove into the pond, and then how it's changed, you know, for where you're at now from, you know, even a marketing standpoint for what you're doing?
Well, you know, I started in publishing back before the internet was really a thing. I mean, it was a thing, but it wasn't a thing for authors. We didn't have a website. That was back when you told someone you had a website and people were like, oh, you have a website. Now,
yeah,
if you don't have a website, yeah, exactly. You're really established. Now people look at you sideways if you don't have a website. And honestly, Garrett, that's why I got into the business I'm in, is I wanted to show authors the way. You know, the internet still seems kind of scary. What is search engine optimization? And people, it's exciting for me to share this with people and show them how they can take this paradigm of marketing yourself online and be successful. It started with just websites, and then we realized we had to optimize those websites, and then we realized now it's social. We're driving traffic to our websites through social, and, you know, all this stuff ties in together. While it seems a little daunting, if you break it down one piece at a time, it's really exciting, and I'm passionate about it, and I love helping people figure that out and realizing that, you know, there's not one path. We each have a path that's meant for us. And, you know, when I look at any one author, I say there's three pieces to your budget. There's the amount of money you have to spend, but there's also the amount of time you have to spend. And the third piece is the emotional aspect. So how comfortable are you with social media and putting yourself out there and blogging and writing or being, you know, having video of yourself? You know, whatever your comfort zone is, that's a piece of your budget. And you have to figure out what that looks like before you decide what path you're going to take.
So when you are talking with an author for the first time and you are having, you know, some of these, you know, reality checks about, you know, how comfortable you are with yourself, social media, technology, and things like this, what kind of a learning curve are you finding, or is there a typical answer to this? So what kind of learning curve do you have when you're working with a new client as far as, you know, what level of comfort they're going to have going into something that is really kind of unknown for them?
Yeah. You know what? Honestly, most of my authors used to be, I would teach them how to cut and paste, you know, control C and control V. But now I find that people are really savvy. And I think it's because of Facebook, honestly, because grandparents and parents wanted to see what their kids were doing on Facebook, and they realized,
right,
in order to be on top of it, they needed to be there. They needed to jump into that pond, so to speak. So there's definitely been a transition, I would say, in the last 5 years that people are becoming more comfortable with technology. And part of what I like doing is showing people that I think that the one thing that holds you back is fear. So if I can show you that, you know what, you can do this. This is possible for you. And if they put the fear aside and wrap their brain around the goal and where they're going to get with this, it becomes easier. You know, the whole idea of blogging used to be really scary for people. What am I going to blog about? Well, once they start to break down why they're passionate about what they're doing and why they wrote this book, all of a sudden those ideas start to flood forward. And then realizing that, okay, well, blogging really isn't that difficult. If you can use Word, you can use a website. WordPress-driven websites is what we use in particular. So, you know, putting that fear aside and realizing your goals, I think, is a pretty cool thing. And it's so possible now when it didn't used to be. There was a lot of things people had to tackle. You had to have a lot more money to get any kind of visibility. And it's just not true now. Now you have to be savvy. And now really what you need is a lot more time. You got to invest
You got to invest the time on this. And then do you – so when well, you have a whole host of services that you offer. And by the way, for anybody who's listening tonight who wants information on Monkey See Media and how Jennifer can help you, I've actually put a hyperlink on the show, not only to Monkey See Media's Facebook page, their company website, but also all of the little bullet points that are on here actually connect to Monkey See Media's website. So you can go and find out more information directly. So I encourage any author who is listening tonight to go do that. You, Jennifer, you also do a lot of speaking and events around the San Diego area. How do you take your brand out to the street and, you know, recruit when you're at these types of events?
You know, I don't really recruit. I would say that's the one thing I'm bad at, is selling myself. What I do is I'm passionate about educating and showing people that there's a way that they can take their brand, they can figure out what it is, they can mold it, and they can set their goals in place. So, I mean, most of my business comes to me through referrals, or people see me speak and decide they want to work with me. But we've never done any advertising, and I'm not big on selling, really. I feel like if I give a lot of information away, the right people will find me. My ideal client will find me.
But to me, that's almost being the best type of salesperson, is showing the value that you have and then letting them. It's kind of like the tide goes out and then the tide comes in. And I think you've had a recent article out, top three SEO mistakes that you're making right now. And I enjoyed the heck out of reading that today. You've also got another article, and I've got it up somewhere on my screen that I was reading as well, that you put out here. So, you know, you give away a lot of content. The other article I was reading is What is Fair Use? And I think that you even talked about that at the writers' conference a few months back. So when you get ready to, you know, share information or give out that information, like this top three SEO mistakes you're making right now, available on jenniferthompson.com, how do you pick which topic du jour is going to be the one that you're going to be writing about? And how much do you want to give away as you're getting ready to share?
I give away everything. I never hold anything back, and that's always been my mission. And I, like I said, I feel like the more I give away, the more likely I am to find my ideal client. So in terms of how I find my topics, I'm constantly reading. I subscribe to all the blogs and, you know, any SEO websites out there. And then also when I meet with a client, or if I'm at a conference and someone asks me a question, I have a little notebook and I jot it down. I'm like, that's a great question. I think I'll answer that in my blog next week. So there's a plethora of things I can talk about. And, you know, sometimes one article will lead to five other articles. It can be a bit of a storm sometimes if you're not careful.
And so, one of the things that I liked about your presentation, you really talked a lot about how to, you know, utilize the search engine optimization, or making sure that you're labeling your pictures. It's not just listed as, you know, image 137.
Right.
Can you talk about some of the things that people do as they're getting ready to, you know, put their websites together or start promoting themselves on social media, some things that people might be able to pick up and learn from tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, one of the top things I love to teach people is about image optimization. Most of us, when we take a photograph, it's going to be it depends on the settings of our iPhone or our camera, but typically it's going to be set to print. And the fact is, we don't need our images to be such high resolution for the internet, and it slows it down. So if you're uploading really large files to your blog or your website or social media, it will automatically optimize that. But on our blogs in particular, it's really important that it's optimized so, A, it loads quickly and doesn't slow down the user experience. You know, when you go to a website and an image comes up and it sort of comes up pixel by pixel, like a line of the image slowly starts to appear? Yeah, it's like, why does that happen? Well, it's just because it's a really high-resolution image. So the server is trying to convey that amount of information. And it's just too much information. It's not necessary for the internet. So that's why we said, you know, it's pixels per inch. You kind of look at it like you would sandpaper. Like the more, the finer grain the sandpaper is, you know, the more dots there are, right? Well, that's kind of how it is with images. It's pixels per inch. And the more pixels there are, then the longer it takes to load. So in print, it'd be dots per inch. And we only need 72 ppi for our images. And most print images are 300. So there's a, I'm going to go ahead and give away a link right now. It's Web Resizer, and that's webresizer.com. And that's a place where people can go and upload their image for free. And then you can downsize the resolution, and you can crop it, too. A lot of times there's a lot of information in the photograph that's not needed, and we don't need such a big image. So especially if it's a photograph of yourself and maybe you're a speaker at a conference, you know, make sure you optimize that image and crop it down to the right size. And then the other thing that you mentioned, Garrett, is naming your image. So Google indexes everything on the internet. And if your image is IMG underscore 3586, that doesn't tell Google anything about what that image is. So typically it's a JPEG, right? So you can rename your JPEG. On my computer, I just right-click the name of the file and then rename it. It depends on the kind of computer you're on, but I'm on a Mac. I don't know what kind of a computer you use, Garrett, but when you rename your JPEG,
I'm on a Mac too. I don't know how to use an IBM any longer.
I don't either. That's how I started in college, and I'm like, I have no idea how to use those computers. By the way, I have to apologize. I'm getting off of a cold, so I know my voice is a little scratchy.
No, you sound great.
Oh, well, good. I'm not. My voice isn't normally this low.
Okay.
So I just right-click and rename the image. So if it's a picture of me, I would name it Jennifer-Thompson.jpg. You can also throw in author. You can throw in speaker. If it's the cover of your book, then you definitely want to name it the cover of your book. And by the way, the hyphen is to separate words. That tells Google that Jennifer and Thompson are two separate words and they should be indexed as such.
So, okay, a follow-up question on that, because that was one of the main takeaways that I took from your presentation, is everything that I now save is Garrett underscore Miller underscore, and then, you know, the event or the date or the whatever. Is there a benefit of not having like Jennifer Thompson mushed together? And is it important to have that underscore between your first and last name or the event or, you know, your blueberry underscore cheesecake or, you know, whatever you're going to talk about?
Right. So in code, typically you'll see underscores. But when I'm naming an image, I always use hyphens because that tells Google those are two different words. It's a hyphen, not an underscore. Yeah, so an underscore tells Google that it's the same word. So we want Jennifer and Thompson to be indexed as two separate words.
Gotcha. Okay, now I have homework after the show tonight. Thank you, Jennifer, for that.
I apologize.
No, it's great clarification. So, you know, looking at the article that you have on your website, this is under your blog area, the top three SEO mistakes you're making right now. I don't really understand what metadata is, and I know that you've talked about it before and why this is important, but what is that and why is that so important to make sure that it's listed correctly?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, what's funny, I remember when I worked at the publishing company back in the 90s and I told my boss, hey, we need a website. And he said, great, make that happen. And I was like, okay. One of the things that confounded me the most was metadata. What the heck is metadata? And really, it's just data about data. It tells Google what this data is about. So this image, what's it about? Well, Jennifer Thompson is the metadata, and it tells you that this picture has something to do with Jennifer Thompson. So keywords and title tags and image description tags, these are all the opportunities we have to add metadata. It's the back-end information about the front-end information that our readers are viewing. But we want Google to index it properly, and we want to come up for relevant content. So it's really just helping Google index our content. Google doesn't pay attention to a string of keywords in the back-end. That used to be what we did for metadata. We just did a whole long string of keywords. And as you can imagine, people took advantage of that in terms of trying to get ranked. So Google said, okay, we're just going to forget it. We don't pay any attention to keywords. But now metadata has become really crucial for authors because for example, on Amazon, when you upload your book and you're selling your book, you have to put the metadata in there. You have a description, you have keywords, tags. All of those things help Amazon deliver your book to your reader properly. So metadata is not just being used in search engines, you know, in terms of search results in that way, but it's being used in Goodreads and Amazon and iTunes. So it's really critical that authors understand what metadata is. In fact, Angela Bull, who is the CEO and director of IBPA, which is International Book Publishers Association, she teaches a class on metadata that's great. It kind of breaks it down and helps people understand what a BISAC code is and why you need to properly label your book with a BISAC, you know, not use general, for example, because if you use general, you're going to be placed into a slush fund. So, and people don't realize this. So, I mean, metadata is way more important than it's ever been, not just for your website. There's another book by an author named David Wogan. In fact, Garrett, he'd be a great person to have on your show to talk about this
Love
for
to.
An hour.
Okay.
Yeah, David Wogan. It's W-O-G-A-H-N. And he spoke at the recent publishing university in Salt Lake City about this very topic.
I've just written his name down, so guess who I'm going to be Googling after the show?
Yeah, and his website is sellbox.com.
Okay. Okay. I love making notes. This is cool. Thank you very much for that. So we'll get in touch with him and get him on soon. So you mentioned something just a second ago about what Google does and does not do any longer. You know, 'cause I remember this goes back a hot minute, but at one point I had designed a company website. This goes back a different really career. And I spent hours researching all the, you know, the hot keywords for that particular industry and making sure I used them all in the right place and, you know, doing the SEO stuff. And now, as I'm understanding it, you're saying that a lot of those, you know, those keywords and things like that, because, you know, they were overused, now really aren't tracked by Google. So what are things that, you know, writers or empire builders out there really should be thinking about today when they're putting, you know, the information together for the optimization? Is there different ways outside of like the metadata that we should be looking at, or different ways to put in keywords?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you asked. So, you know, I said that Google ignores the string of keywords, but now they're looking for those keywords in your content. So they're going to look for, when a spider or a search engine bot goes to a website, they're going to view it like a person does. They're going to start at the top, and kind of like if you visually look down, what do we look at first? We look at headers, subtitles, bullet points. You know, those are the things that our eye catches first, and those are the things that spiders and bots will index first. So hyperlinks, which I call anchor text, are also very important, and these are where we place keywords. So we still use those keywords. So that research you did is phenomenal and really critical. I have a spreadsheet of my keywords that I keep track of. I get Google alerts for my most important keywords. And then I try and write content about those particular keywords as often as possible, because what's happening is we are trying to be relevant for those keywords. So what makes us relevant, right? Well, it's the content. I mean, everyone says this and it's almost cliche, but it's true. Content is king. So if you do nothing more than just write lots of great content, your website will get ranked. You know, we don't know what the algorithms are. They're constantly changing. Google wants it to be better and better. And I say Google, you know, there's other search engines, but I think Google is the number one, mostly because they have some of the great tools for us. I mean, Google AdWords allows you to do some keyword research and, you know, get some recommendations for other keywords you may not have thought of. The first thing I do when I come up with my keyword list is I search those words. Who comes up first and why? And can you rank? Is it possible to actually rank for those phrases? And, you know, when I say keywords, it's not a word. It's a string of words. It's 3 to 5 words typically. I would never go to a search engine and put books into a, you know, a search and hope to get something back. We gotta think like our audience. You know, if I'm looking for a very specific type of book, what am I going to type into a search engine? You know, and I think it's so hard for people to put themselves in the seat of the reader. But if you just start thinking like your reader, what would I look for if I were looking for a book like this? you know, what about this book makes it unique? What about it makes it interesting and fun to read? You know, maybe it has vampires, or maybe there's time travel. You know, so these are keywords that are really important. And then go and look for those and see what comes up first. A lot of times it's going to be Amazon, and we can't compete with Amazon. So we have to go a little bit deeper. You know, what about the time travel is interesting? Maybe you go back and have an affair with Benjamin Franklin. I don't know. So, you know, there was a time travel book like that, by the way. And actually, it's a really great book. So just coming up with this keyword phrase and this list of keywords is something that's it's ongoing. It's never done. You know, the task is never complete because it has to evolve. Your audience is evolving. Your writing is evolving. We just have to stay on top of what people are doing. So how do we do that? We track our traffic. Speaking of Google, Google Analytics.
And this is probably where a perfect example of what Monkey See Media does expertly for your clients comes in, is because, you know, I'm going to take a wild guess here that most people that are coming to you because they're great at writing their books, but outside of that, they're not social media experts, they're not SEO experts, they're not website experts or book design experts, and they need somebody to kind of handle that, you know, all of the minutia of that to allow them to be the authors that they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So how involved is that for your clients when you're working with them? What kind of, is there like a typical plan that you guys put together for, you know, people realizing that, of course, everybody's different, but do you have like a standard package for folks, or how does that work at Monkey See Media?
Well, I mean, it is. It's always different, and it really depends on that budget I talked about. The most important piece, I think, is the emotional side, you know. Do you want to do this? Do you want to spend time on social? Do you want to spend time blogging? Are you willing to track the traffic and see what's happening and what's working? We had an author once who has a book about coping with suicide. Her husband had committed suicide, and she had two children. And so, you know, she was working through the grief and how to help her kids work through their grief and raise a family. And, you know, she came out the other end a stronger person, and she wanted to help others. So what we found interesting is her recipe blogs were the most popular, because she really came to realize that what people needed most was self-care. So she started sharing like healthy recipes and, you know, delicious recipes for you to help take care of your inner self, which helps take care of your outer self. And those really started to grab some traffic, get more visibility, and those were being shared. And, you know, she hadn't been tracking that. She wouldn't have realized what her audience was doing, and she wouldn't have been able to adapt her message to meet their need.
And it's again, measuring what people are responding to is, I think, probably the most important thing that you're going to be able to do. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday. He's involved in the entertainment business, and he made a comment to me. And it, for me, I just figured he knew this because this is what I see him doing. But he goes, you know, I figured out that I get the most responses off of the nature pictures I take for the certain national park. And he says, that's when I get my hundreds and hundreds of likes. And I said, well, of course, because that's your, you know, outside of your entertainment projects, that's what people come to expect from you, are your beautiful pictures. And so when you post about anything else, nobody cares about that. Not that it's not wonderful and it's not important. It is, because, you know, you care about it. But what people are really going to pop for are your pictures. And I don't think you ever really thought of it in terms of that. And I said, so post more pictures if you're not going to be talking about your movies.
Isn't that interesting? That must have been a pretty cool aha moment for him, too.
A little bit, but you know, it's one of those things that, and I wrote down the number, and I'll have you correct me, but you made a key statement in your presentation about how to interact and how often to quote unquote sell and then not sell to your friends and family, and everybody's on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of these things. And if memory serves me right, it's like for every time you want to post something about buy my book, you need to have at least 9 other non-selly types of posts to, you know, keep people engaged. Is that statistic still kind of current or relevant?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the fact is no one wants to be sold to. They want to feel like they're part of your tribe. They want to feel like they're part of something big. You know, and I want to help support you if you have a new book come out, but if all you do is tell to me, I'm not going to want to support you anymore. You know, we have to be in a conversation. I kind of liken it to walking into a room of 50 people and holding your book up in the air and yelling, hey, buy my book. You know, no, everyone's going to look at you like, what? Why? What's wrong with you? You know, we go in and we shake hands and we ask what other people are doing. And, you know, you start a conversation. We don't just yell at people. So, yeah, I mean, it's just really about being genuine. And people on social are very serious. People who are really there continually are serious about their content. And if they feel like you're not genuine and you're just selling to them, they're going to ignore you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, go ahead.
Go ahead, Nicholas.
We have a question from Tony who pinged me right before the show because he's very excited to hear you tonight, Jennifer. He says, are you only West Coast or can you help people on the East Coast as well?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we help people everywhere. In fact, I just got a call from a guy in Copenhagen who found us on Google. And I have a call with him, I think, tomorrow, which is kind of exciting. But, yeah, we're worldwide.
That's Tony, there you go. And I think he's already put in a note to contact you guys. So hopefully that will – maybe there's an opportunity for you guys to work together. You never know. So, Jennifer, can you talk about a couple of things that I'm just really fascinated about? You know, because you do it just says it right here on the show page. So it's not like I'm making this up because this comes right off of your website at Monkey See Media. But you do book covers, websites, branding development, headshots, product photography, and book trailers. I'm really loving the last three items on here because I think, again, talking to authors who are coming onto the show or just authors in general, to me, that's, the three areas where they just really are, I don't want to say lacking, but that's where they all say, boy, I could really use help with that. Why do you think a good headshot's important for your authors when they're getting ready to sell a book?
Well, ultimately, I think of your photograph as part of your personal brand. And so how do you want to represent yourself? And, you know, people ask me, should I have one photograph or many? And I think it depends on the person. I mean, for you, Garrett, I would say you're very photogenic and you're a handsome man and you take good photos. So you should have a lot of photographs to help, you know, convey who you are and what your brand is. If you're awkward and you hated having your photograph taken, I'd say get one good shot and use it for everything. You know, that's part of your comfort level. But, you know, people do judge a book by its cover. You know, they're going to judge us. And if our first meeting with someone is online, they're going to take a look at our photograph. And what do we convey? Do you look stiff? Are you incredibly corporate professional? Are you laid back and fun and engaging? Do you look like someone I could, you know, have a cup of coffee with? Or, you know, these are the things that we figure out before we go in and do headshots. What message do we want to convey? And that's the only way we can do it online is with a good photo. Now, video is even better. But if you're super uncomfortable on video, then why torture yourself? Because it's not going to help you if it's not done well.
Yeah, because otherwise, it's horrible. You mean, because you can tell, okay, this is totally a deer in the headlights type of a scenario. This is not a good idea. But that kind of goes into something that's new in the industry in the last few years are book trailers. You know, in a million years ago, you know, you had to wait for like a New York Times, you know, book review or something like this, talking about something you hope to be able to go and read in the library, assuming that it wasn't checked out. Why do you think book trailers have really caught on with authors and then also the public?
Well, I mean, we all want real time, right? We want it now. We don't want to have to read about it, which is kind of sad. But, you know, video just gives us this real time picture of what we're going to get. And a good book trailer should be anywhere from 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds at the longest. You know, and it's just such a great way for people to get a feel for the book and to be really drawn in and be feel captured by it, you know. I don't recommend book trailers have acting. I think you should leave that to the movies because personally, when I read a book, I don't want to know what the person looks like. You know, I create a world in my head. I want to escape into that world in the book. And for me, it's going to be different than it is for you. And this is, of course, based on our own personal biases and the people, our experiences. So if you create that for someone in the video, I think you've done them a disservice and potentially have convinced them not to buy the book. So, you know, they should be entertaining, potentially funny, interesting, thought-provoking, inspirational, heartbreaking, potentially, you know, whatever it is that pulls at the heartstrings of that person, that's what's going to draw them in and get them to buy the book.
So saying that, because I think I've seen like maybe, I'm so bad, I've probably seen like two or three book trailers ever. What makes a good book trailer outside of the, you know, let's pull them in, is it animation? Is it just words? Is it a picture of the cover? What kind of things do you use to make a book trailer relevant for the particular author?
Well, you know, it's the same thing when you're writing a book. I mean, we have an outline of character plot. Character arc and plot and, you know, some sort of crescendo that gets us excited about it. So in 30 seconds, we have to somehow introduce the crux of what's happening in this book and what's in it for you, the reader. And it's going to be different for every book. For some, it's going to be just visuals. Maybe a voiceover isn't necessary. For others, we definitely need that voiceover. And, you know, it has to be well done. It's sort of like taking the back cover of your book and turning it into a short video in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you can have people, but you just don't show their face. Like I'll show the side of them, so it's sort of obscured. And so I see sexy blonde, or I see trustworthy older grandfather. You know what I mean? But I don't actually
right.
see what they look like because I'm going to fill that in my head.
So let me see. Do you have a few more minutes, Jennifer? Can I keep you for just maybe another 5 or 10 minutes? Would that be cool?
Yeah. I figured we'd be on the phone for at least another 10 minutes. So absolutely.
Okay, good. I want to be respectful of your time, especially if you've had a cold. I didn't want to, you know, I'll keep you for like the rest of the night, but I know you've got other things to do. For authors who are out there, if they're looking, you know, because again, everything costs a dollar. If they're out there saying, okay, I've written the next great American novel, and I know if I could just, you know, get the right whatever behind me, I would suddenly be able to, you know, be on Oprah, and I'll be on, you know, this book club and that book club. Do you have a recommended budget that authors look to have when they're going out to do this? Because you're not working with people who are signed to, like, you know, major book publishers. You're working with independent authors from around the country and around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, the budget ranges from $250 to $5,000 and up. And I think it's not about the money. It's about who you're working with, and it's about the work they've produced in the past and how much they get what you're doing. You know, a $250 book trailer usually looks like a $250 book trailer and doesn't really help sell your book. I say if you don't have the money to invest in doing it well, just don't do it at all. I would rather see someone spend that money elsewhere and getting more visibility. You know, you have to drive traffic to the video, too. I mean, you know, just create it and they will come. It's unfortunately not that easy. If it has something about it that's really – that grabs, you know, pulls people and tugs at their heartstrings, they're going to share it. So if you have a concept or an idea that you feel is really going to go viral, then absolutely invest the money in a great book trailer. Because that's what it takes, is it takes people sharing it on Facebook. Now, Facebook is actually great for ads. You can really narrow in your focus on Facebook in terms of your demographic. Hopefully, part of my branding process is determining who the audience is. I mean, most people tell me everyone should read their book, and that's just such a tough market to hit. So if you know who your audience is, I get it. You know, it's a great book.
Yeah,
and everyone
read my book.
Read it, but not.
Yeah.
But I, you know, we can't target an 18-year-old female and 72-year-old male. They just aren't interested in the same thing. So we have to have an ideal. And I usually say your target market should be no more than a 20-year spread. Now, that's not to say that other people won't buy it, but that's not who we're targeting. And your ideal is that one unique individual who is the perfect person to buy your book. And then you can go out from there and figure out how to reach them and place ads on Facebook for that particular demographic. One of the things I do as well in my consulting is just give advice. You know, if people want to call me and ask me, hey, do you think it's a good idea? I have $1,000 to spend. What should I spend it on? You know, I'm happy to help them figure out the best way to spend that money, because publishing is tough. It's easy to spend a lot of money, and it's hard to make any money in selling books. And a lot of people will make claims that I think are maybe a little out there, you know, like all you have to do is do this and you'll sell books. And there's no guarantees either. You know, sometimes it just takes one interesting moment. In fact, a friend of mine's sister wrote a biography on Sarah Palin. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, Sarah Palin was the VP. They could not keep that book in stock, you know, the VP.
Just a little bit of timing.
Potential. Right, exactly. That book would not have sold that well had that not happened. So you never know what's going to happen to sell your book. But you have to be smart about it. Your budget needs to be comfortable for you to never make that money back. And that's usually when I ask people, what's your budget? They usually say, I have no idea. And I'm like, okay, well, what can you comfortably spend if you were to not make any money back? And then if you did make it back, awesome. That's great. Obviously, that's our goal. But I like people to have a realistic budget so that they don't end up spending, you know, $5,000 on a book trailer and $5,000 on a website and, you know, another $5,000 on the book production. I've seen people spend $100,000 on their book easy and not make that back.
Oh, that is tough. Okay,
and, you know,
can I go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's because we're passionate, you know. As authors, we have something we want to share with the world, and we're so passionate about it that I think it's easy to run away with yourself and think, oh, if I just invest this $50,000, I'll be a bestseller. But we have to be more reasonable with that.
Well, if we go back to advertising, and I'm asking because you were really my expert on all things having to do with publishing. You talked about advertising on Facebook. In your experience, have you found that authors have gotten a good return on their investment for Facebook advertising?
Yeah, I have. They have to do it right, though. And, you know, it's very little. You spend $50, you can have a $50 budget. As long as you're really targeting, it depends on what you want to do, too. I mean, you could just be trying to get likes, try and get followers who are potential readers. Or you could actually have a video with a call to action. I mean, there's so many different ways to advertise on Facebook. But it's a great way to build up visibility. And it's pretty inexpensive, you know, relatively. How many of those people buy books? That's negligible.
Because sometimes it really is just about, you know, building your brand or the awareness of, you know, and then it's once you've hit that initial campaign, it's going back afterwards. And it's not like, you know, I would think that you'd probably want to spend, you know, when you're consulting with people, say, okay, we're going to have the initial rollout. So you're going to, you know, spend your, you know, $50 here. And then in another month, we're going to do another rollout or, you know, phase 2, phase 3, phase 4. So, you know, it's not like let's blow every dime that we've got, you know, on day one, and then maybe we hit a bunch of people and maybe we don't. So how important is long-term planning for what you do with your clients?
Oh, I think it's important that if you're releasing a book, I like people to be thinking about it 2 years in advance. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. I mean, because you have a slow build. It does go by fast, doesn't it? But, you know, I mean, usually a campaign is going to be about 90 days long. So if you can spend time really polishing your personal brand and your message, that is going to be the foundation for everything you do. And then beyond that, if you already have a following of people who are reading your content on your blog and sharing your content on whatever social platform you're on, those are the people that are going to support you when you finally release your book.
Do you talk to authors about doing any kind of, and I don't know what it's called, so forgive me, but it's like a sneak preview. It's like, you know, read my chapter one, or, you know, read, you know, 3 pages of chapter two, or, you know, doing kind of slow drip releases prior to doing a full release. I've talked to a couple of people who have experimented with that, and they've really enjoyed that and thought that really helped their book sales. Is that something that you've heard before, or is that just kind of a weird thing?
No, I think that's an awesome thing. It depends on the book. Yeah, if you can, I love dripping out content in advance. In fact, some authors will drip it out while they're writing it too. You know, getting some help with character development, you know, letting their audience know, hey, I'm getting ready to develop this kind of character, I need a name, and, you know, having people involved in the process, especially if you've already written books and you have a following, that really helps them stay with you throughout the writing of the next book. And, you know, they typically say that your third book sells your first book. By then, you've figured it out, right? You know what you're doing. You have an audience. You've engaged with them. You have a solid list. For some people, they're afraid to share their content. I think it really depends on the book. I think if it's a funny book and you have like short snippets that are really engaging, then I think sharing is a great idea. Maybe inspirational books could be another one, and definitely nonfiction, like, you know, on a particular topic, a how-to, I would definitely share that content in advance. And that's something that I'm doing. Actually, I'm writing a book on personal branding, and so I'm sharing my content as I go along, and then all of it's going to be compiled into a book.
How smart!
You know, it gives people... Yeah, well, I guess so. It gives people an idea of what you're all about. Why should I trust you? What's in it for me, right? So the more you give people, and that's why it's always been my philosophy that the more I give away, the more people will be attracted to me and my ideal client will find me.
Absolutely. I think that is really cool. Yeah, and I want to switch gears real quick to talk about another topic that I hear a lot about, and that's what is fair use? This is, again, another article off of your blog on jenniferthompson.com. Why do you think that that is such a hot topic in the world today in writing, music, you know, anything that's creative?
Yeah. And first of all, I want to give a shout out to Tanya Evans. She's a IP attorney who actually submitted or contributed that content for the fair use article on my blog. So, why is it important? You know, so many people come to me and they like have music lyrics in their book, and they're going to get sued. I mean, that's copyrighted material. The other
right.
thing that happens a lot is people share on their blog, they grab a photograph on Google that's perfect for their blog. Well, if you don't have the rights to use it, it's someone else owns that copyright. I don't think people realize that photographs are copyrighted. If you use someone's photograph and you don't give them credit or you don't have permission, and by the way, just giving someone credit is not good enough.
Really?
If they, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like if I take your book and I sell it and I give you credit.
Oh, well, when you put it in those terms.
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay.
So I can't use your content without compensating you in some way. And that's why I love Creative Commons, by the way. Creative Commons is a place where you can go and you can allow people to use your content. You can get more visibility. And say, yes, you can use it, but with these stipulations, I want credit or... I want, you know, whatever your copyright terms are, it's a very user-friendly, people-friendly way to protect your content. And there's tons of places. I have another article on my blog, 20 places to find free images to share on your blog or in your social media. And, I mean, images to help everything is more powerful if you have an image, obviously, because I don't have to read about it to figure out what it's about. So it draws me in. So we really want to have beautiful, stunning images to draw people in. But again, someone owns that copyright. I had a client who shared an article from the New York Times on his blog. So basically he said, here's the headline, here's the image from the article, and here's my commentary. And then there was a link back over to the article. I think I talked about this in my class, actually, that you sat in on. He was sued for $7,000 by the photographer because he didn't have the rights. The New York Times had the rights to use that image, but he did not. So, you know, if you're going to have, and he said, but isn't that fair use? No, it's not. It's not. And that's why it's so important for people to be really careful. Either take your own photographs or get one that's rights free. And there's so many places to get rights free images. You know, and I think words are easier for us to understand, but photographs, we're still kind of wrapping our brain around.
Well, you know, and especially for photographers who make their living, you know, taking pictures, that's taking, you know, rent money right out of their pocketbooks. Absolutely.
Well, it's harder and harder for photographers. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
is harder for them. I love your site, jenniferthompson.com. Your tagline, by the way, smart publishing for smart authors. I love that. At the bottom of each of our blogs, you have these really cool, I call them, and you're going to give me the right word, but what is fair use article, you have, for example, tags, author advice, author tips, blogger advice, blogger tips, fair use for bloggers, what is fair use, and they're all hyperlinks to take you, you know, elsewhere, in the article. How do you decide which keywords you're going to use? Is this something that you get with your Google Analytics or your Google keywords on how you're going to kind of tag your article?
Well, those ones I just come up with on my own. So I usually think of a tag as a sub like a subcategory. Like, you know, okay. when you go to someone's blog and they have 10 categories, that's doable. If they had 50 categories, they're no longer categorized, right? You lose me. So this is an opportunity to put in some tags that say, okay, this is about this and it's about this. And it helps optimize a little further. It helps your audience understand kind of the basics of what that article is about. And again, it's like a subcategory. So as you start blogging, WordPress is automatically going to recommend tags that you write about frequently. So there are
okay.
tools that will help you pull those out, but I typically just write them myself because I'm the one who knows the most about what that article is about. And I always write for my user and not the search engines in everything I do. It's good to be as detailed as possible, but not to the point of annoyance, right? So
right.
if you write for your readers, then the search engines will come.
And so what is that like? So you write this fantastic article, and then at that point, do you go back and try to say, okay, what, you know, I'm going to tag these particular things, or do you go and research separately from the article that you've written, you know, how to make that optimized as best as you possibly can?
Well, no, I literally organically just make them up as I write it.
I love that.
Well,
that's such a simple answer, Jennifer. That's not what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, honestly, you'll make yourself crazy if you overthink it. And I think that's
right.
where people run into trouble, you know. I write about internet marketing a lot, so that's going to appear a lot on my blog. I write about search engine optimization. I write about WordPress and, you know, publishing. So those things are always going to appear often because it's genuinely what I talk about.
So as we get ready to wrap up our time, I can't believe an hour has almost gone by, which just absolutely astounds me.
I'm having so much fun with you, Garrett. This is
thank
awesome.
You so much. Well,
you.
Again, jennifer.thompson.com, but it's monkeycmedia.com. Go check that out. So as a public speaker who goes around and gives all kinds of lectures, what are a couple of key presentations that you make that people would be just fools if they missed out on?
Oh, well, that's nice of you. But I guess one of my favorite topics is personal branding right now. I am getting ready to release a book on it, so obviously I'm pushing that. But I like when people suddenly get this aha moment, like, oh yeah, I guess I do have a brand. You know, the other thing I talk about is websites, but I think one of my favorites is book cover design. Because even though we all know we need a good book cover, what mm-hmm. makes a good book cover, right? So the elements that turn a cover from okay into really fantastic and dynamic. And the word I like to use is professional. You know,
yes.
it used to be that we're self-published authors. And I don't use that word. I use indie. I look at it like the indie music has really taken off, indie movies has taken off, and so will indie books. But it's only going to take off and we're only going to be respected if we're professional and we do everything the right way. And then we can make mistakes. You know, I'm not
sure
we can make mistakes, but so, you know, professional book covers is really one of the number one things that authors need to do, not just for our own books, but for the industry in general.
So out of all the things that you do, is there anything that you still do that is just really hard for you, or have you mastered everything that you're doing today?
Oh my gosh, I'm constantly learning. Every day I'm like, I didn't know that. How is it I didn't know that? You know, I think that's what I like about this, is it keeps me stimulated and I'm constantly having a new conversation with amazing authors on topics I know nothing about, you know, and I come to understand, you know, what it's like to have a spouse commit suicide and then helping them, you know, figure out how to navigate the internet in a gentle way to me is always a new experience, and there's always something I can take away from it. But yeah, I'm definitely still learning.
So if I were to ask you, what would be like one or two final thoughts, you know, and I always say, you know, advice for others, but just like, you know, what would be like your, you know, mantra in life for, you know, having a great evening after doing a radio show?
Oh my gosh. A great mantra. I'm not sure I understand what you want. So I think if I were to give some people a takeaway, I would start with this. Figure out what your goals are and where you want to be. You know, where are you trying to get? You know, and I always break it down into 1, 3, 5, and 10-year goals. What do I want to do in this next year, and what do I have to accomplish in order to get there? And then once you know your goals, talk to yourself about what your budget is and be realistic about it, because it's, like I said, it's so easy to spend so much money and to believe in the people who say, pay me this much money and you'll be famous. You know, really think about how you want to spend your money and put together a roadmap, because we can't get to where we're going without a roadmap, right? So the goals, the budget, and then what are you really selling? Why are you passionate about what you're doing? You know, I'm passionate about helping authors publish right and be professional and, you know, attain their goals. Why are you passionate about what you do?
That's it. Well, that's it. That's okay. Perfect answer for that. What are you going to do tonight?
You know, actually, I'm going to a class, a memoir writing class. I work with a lot of memoirists lately, and the gal, Marnie Friedman, who would also be a fantastic person to have on your show, Garrett, she's an amazing teacher, and she said to me, Jennifer, I want you to take my class. I know you have a book in you. And I was really resistant, and of course, I have lots of books in me, but I never thought about taking a class, and I am absolutely loving it. She's talking about character arc and plot development and theme and, you know, what's the container for your book and your story. And so I'm really excited, and who knows, maybe I'll have a memoir someday.
Well, okay, then you can come back for your personal branding book, and we'll come back for the memoir, and I appreciate you doing that. So, Jennifer, I'm going to let you go because I know you've got the class to go to. Number one, thank you very much. Everybody go to monkeycmedia.com. for all help with, you know, building your own brand, book covers, websites, branding development, headshots, product photography, and book trailers. And there's links on the website on the show page tonight for all of that. Jennifer, it's been a pleasure having you here. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, thank you, Garrett. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to staying in touch with you and watching our brands grow.
Let's get them going. Thanks, Jennifer. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Wow, what an awesome treat to have Jennifer on tonight. Just a real quick reminder where we're going tomorrow at 6:45. The phone lines open up for Rebecca Fisk if you'd like to call in and ask her a question. Friday on the Friday Night Dance Party, Mr. Ed Roman will be our VIP special guest star live from Canada. And Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, we've got another episode of Super Gay Radio with my co-host Paul in Mass. Wow. There's so much I've learned. I need to put a dash and not an underscore. And thanks to Jennifer Thompson, we're going to be doing all of that. So I've got to go back and get all of that updated. If you are looking for some of the resources that she talked about, webresizer.com is the website that you can go and resize your pictures. So it's web savvy for that. For any part of this that you've missed, just wait for the replay. It'll be live for you in about 15 minutes. You can go back and check that out. And in the meantime, we're going to give you a little word from our friends at It Matters Radio, and then we're going to close out the show. So stay tuned for this, and we will see you live on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I have a hard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.